Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Affney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God and his kingdom. We're going to talk first in this program about an issue that I think is of surpassing importance to all of us who care about the national security of the United States. And that is what is being done to subject the United States military to what some call the woke agenda, but which is properly understood, really, plain old-fashioned cultural Marxism. And what is that? Well, it is a program that is designed to divide and conquer, in this case, the United States military, but the United States of America more generally, if its proponents can get away with it. A man standing up against it, manfully, I might say, at the Center for America Renewal is a man I've just gotten to know a little bit and I'm very pleased to present to you all. His name is Sergeant Wade Miller. He is a former United States Marine Corps sergeant, served three tours in combat in Iraq and the Horn of Africa during his time in the service. He has gone on to a number of other roles. He has been a Tea Party activist. He has worked for the Heritage Action Organization, promoting conservative values in our country. He's worked as a political director for Senator Ted Cruz of Texas and as the chief of staff for a member of the House of Representatives from that state, Chip Roy. We're very pleased to have him with us. Wade, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
You have been, I think, doing some really important research and analysis on this whole phenomenon of the woke or cultural Marxist program inside the United States military. It is claimed that this is a necessary corrective to racism inside the ranks. You've served inside those ranks. You have seen firsthand the nature of the United States military. Is this a systemically racist organization, our armed forces? And is the kind of corrective actually something better?
Well, the easy answer is no. The hard answer is that it's becoming systemically racist. So when I was in, we were all side by side, brothers in arms, race didn't matter. Religion to a certain extent didn't matter, although overwhelmingly Christian. Your background, socioeconomic background didn't matter. We were all in it together. We were brothers, we were family. That's the type of social environment that I experienced in the Marine Corps. That's not to say that there's not instances of racism or instances of sexism here or there. It's not systemic. It's not allowed, it's not permitted, it's not elevated or promoted in any way, shape, or form.
Or in fact, it's antithetical, really, to the idea of a meritocracy, which is what the military.
Exactly, but that's quickly changing. So the left is now embracing systemic racism and pushing it and promoting it within the military, and that I don't like to see. The answer to past sin is not future sin, and in fact, they're really taking a page out of Ibram X. Kendi's book, How to Be an Anti-Racist, when they're saying that, the solution to past discrimination is present discrimination, and the solution to present discrimination is future discrimination. And another quote that Kendi says is that racial discrimination, if for the purposes of equity, is anti-racism. So this is a whole movement that the left is trying to push, which is politically correct systemic racism and sexism in order to justify their agenda, which is really, it's a lot of smoke and mirrors. Underlying it all is they want to advance neo-Marxism, and they have to destroy traditional American values and principles to get there. And they will use the specter of anti-racism and diversity, equity, inclusion as a means to get there. And that's exactly what they're doing right now.
And am I correct that what they are really trying to do, whether it's with respect to the military or the country as a whole, is not just eliminate the old and build anew, but destroy these institutions, this republic writ large?
Well, that's exactly right. So old school Marxism was on, you know, based on class warfare. And the Marxists realized they couldn't do that in America because it was up against a more powerful force. And so it really stalled, whereas it is advanced in other places like Europe, it really stalled in America. And so they switched to kind of a neo-Marxist cultural Marxism, which implements intersectionality. And intersectionality is this idea that we're going to pit different groups up against each other on the basis of oppressed versus oppressor. And it's a constant effort by the left to drive wedges between Americans so that they're then perceived as up against one another and they're fighting one another and it causes social strife. That's what they want to do in the military now. And they are doing. They're trying to say that, you know, if you're a white male, you're an oppressor. Therefore, you need to be promoted less than other people that should be elevated, not on the basis of merit, but on the basis of skin color or sex. And then when you have that type of animosity, you're now seeing people that are being promoted or not promoted on no basis of merit, but other immutable traits. And that creates resentment. That's the type of intersectionality wedge that's being advanced in the military and then throughout American society right now.
So going back to your time in uniform, if you can do a thought experiment here, you're in a foxhole. And the guy next to you, whose life, you know, you're counting on being sacrificed to save you, just as you would sacrifice yours to save him, is suddenly infused with this idea that that guy's black, or he got promoted unfairly and I didn't, or I'm black and that guy's white and he's an oppressor. I mean, what is the consequence as a practical matter, Wade? I'm just interested in, you know, how this works in practice. If you dispense with the meritocracy and you instead employ this or apply this kind of arrangement,
it's toxic. It's a cancer on small unit warfare and small unit esprit de corps. So if you're in a foxhole next to someone and that person gets promoted ahead of you, if they've legitimately been working harder, working out, running more, studying more, and they legitimately deserve it, and the metrics show that, then that's leadership. You respect that person because they're running farther than you. They're carrying more weight. But if someone's getting promoted merely on the basis of skin color or sex, that breeds resentment. And then, you know, furthermore, this toxic ideology is teaching that America's evil. Who wants to put their life on the line to fight for a country that's evil? We should be teaching the virtues and benefits. That doesn't mean that we can't talk about past mistakes and learn from those correctives. But if the underlying meme there is that the United States is fundamentally evil, run by oppressors throughout all of our history, including now, you know, who wants to fight and die for that vision? And that's not what should be being taught. And that's not the way people should be promoted. It absolutely will destroy the esprit de corps necessary. The unit psychology that is created is a pressure cooker, and it's very, very delicate because you're teaching people to run into a hail of bullets, and they have to trust that the person on the right and left will advance the mission and is there to protect their flanks. And if you don't trust the person on your left because they're not the most qualified person to be there, that starts to break down, and that matriculates upwards into command. It all breaks down and it doesn't work. At least it doesn't work as effectively as it can.
Yeah. Unit cohesion is something that I think most of us in civilian life have no real appreciation of, but it's absolutely vital, of course, to how the military performs. And just quickly, Wade, we got to take a break in about half a minute. Any question that all of this is having an impact on recruitment to serve in the military?
I think empirically it is. I mean, it's hard to tie it to one issue. I think it's a combination. Again, if you're a 17-year-old who's been taught by your K-12 education system that America's evil, the military is pushing DEI and signaling to, you know, white males that they're not going to be promoted on the basis of their sex or skin, who wants to join that? Who wants to go fight for that? If the military is pushing
their lives on the line, especially, Wade, we have to take a timeout. We'll be right back with more right after this.
The
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Xi Van Fleet is a foreign-born American patriot. In 2021, she prominently opposed the indoctrination and weaponization of our children in Northern Virginia public schools, reminiscent of the Cultural Revolution she lived through in Mao's China. Ms. Van Fleet is now warning that cultural revolutionaries here are using Maoist tactics to take down the party in power's political opponents. She knows from hard first-hand experience that what is being done today to former President Trump and his Make America Great Again movement will not be confined to those immediate targets. Xi Van Fleet attests that even those currently cheering on the prosecutions of Donald Trump and his allies will inevitably find themselves in the cultural Marxist crosshairs, possibly literally. We must indict and prosecute the Chinese Communist Party and its friends before they do the same to all of us. This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're visiting with Wade Miller of the Center for American Renewal. He is a man with considerable experience in uniform as a United States Marine. He has also served in the political world for Senator Ted Cruz and Representative Chip Roy. And I hated to interrupt you, but I had to for a hard break there, Wade. But I did want to pivot, if I can, to a guy who seems to not only have risen through the ranks with this kind of agenda being one that he, in a way epitomizes, but has also become a very vocal advocate for, and that would be this cultural Marxist program. His name is General C.Q. Brown. He has been for the past 3.5 years or so the chief of staff of the United States Air Force. And he is about to become, if Joe Biden has his way, the top military officer of the United States Armed Forces. Tell us a little bit about him and whether this is a good choice.
Sure. So I think that, you know, he's advanced without a lot of pushback in the past. And I think that that's because the conservative movement hasn't really had the ability to start scrutinizing. And it's just been tradition that these promotions kind of push through. But now that we have, you know, Senator Tuberville has a hold on all military nominations on the basis of repealing the DOD's abortion funding law. They're funding abortion travel and related expenses against what many members of Congress would say is legal, you know, in terms of the Hyde Amendment and other provisions of the Congress meant to not fund that type of thing. It's really given us an opportunity for the first time in decades, I think, to really scrutinize on a wide basis who exactly is being promoted. And it's allowed us to uncover a lot about C.Q. Brown, who has called for racial quotas in the promotion system. And that would be a clear violation of the United States Constitution. I think that there's a really good argument that not only should he not be promoted to this top position, but he should be court-martialed. He's actually instituting systemic racism in the United States military in the year 2023. That's what he's trying to do. But it's not just about his radical ideology. It's also about just fundamentally not being able to do the job. He's had many failures in his tenure over the Air Force, and there's been bombing fleets that have been grounded for extended periods of time. Other aircraft wings have been failing. He left a command that right after he left and was promoted, failed its inspection. And that dropped into the lap of another commander who had to clean up that mess. So he has a track record of not actually doing that good of a job. And also he's pushing a very radical ideology that I think merits not only an IG investigation, but potentially court-martial. I mean, he should be separated from command for what he has said publicly.
It's hard to overstate the importance of this, Wade. I thank you for being so forthright about it. Invariably, because General Brown is black, there will be charges that anybody who finds fault with his conduct or his policies is a racist. And yet, as you said earlier, I mean, what people like us who oppose this nomination are really saying is we don't want race having anything to do with the United States military. It hasn't until very recently, and it mustn't if it's to operate properly. And to the extent that performance matters, as you say, this guy's performance certainly shouldn't be rewarded with promotion to yet another position. I saw a meme the other day in which, you know, it was a little bubble thing with C.Q. Brown being congratulated by Joe Biden. And the bubble over C.Q. Brown says, you know, in 3 years, I took the Air Force from marginal to very weak. And the bubble over Joe Biden is, can you do it for the whole U.S. military?
Right.
I mean, heaven forfend that that's where we find ourselves, and yet I think it is. So, Wade, you've worked on the Hill. You know the Senate and the House well. This nomination has a hold on it in the Senate, where senators exclusively get a vote on whether to confirm someone to this position. This does, in fact, provide a vehicle for the kind of debate that is long overdue, does it not? And in particular, perhaps you might just say a word about some research that's been done that suggests this is not a problem just with C.Q. Brown by any means, is it?
No, it's not. And, you know, I'll just quickly say that no matter what we do here, the left is going to claim it's about race. And frankly, I just don't care. I'm tired of that charge. I'm going to do what I need to do to talk about those who should and should not be promoted in our United States military. I don't care about his skin color. If there's another black general that's ready to go who is good for the position, then put him forward. And I know that Chuck Schumer is going to advance.
But it shouldn't be on the basis of his race.
Right. It should be on merit only. And if he happens to be black, I don't care. As long as he's the most qualified person, because that means that the people under his command are safer and the country safer. And that's what matters most to me. I know Chuck Schumer is going to advance this nomination to a vote. And I think that Republicans need to have a spine and vote against it on the merits of the promotion, which he does not deserve. And we should send a signal. But to your other point, you know, we've been now looking at 300 plus other nominees that are their promotions are on hold because of, thankfully, Senator Tuberville is actually standing up for America on this. And it's given us time to really scrutinize these generals. Something like 45 plus percent of them. And William Tebow at Claremont has done some really good work on this. And I fully support his work on this as well. But, you know, upwards of 40 plus percent of these woke senior military officials have been pushing things like DEI or other radical agenda items that have nothing to do with lethality or mission accomplishment. It's all just an attempt to advance neo-Marxism within the military. And some of them may not even really believe it, but they're playing along with it. And that in and of itself is a problem. They need to have a spine. They're in the military. They need to have some intestinal fortitude here, be principled and stand up for it because they took an oath to do that.
Yeah, you know, I think you said that DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, as it's called, has nothing to do with, you know, mission performance. That would be a problem in its own right, it seems to me. But if, as you said, this idea that you're going to put people into certain positions, you're going to promote them to other positions on the basis of their race or on the basis of their sex or on the basis of their, I don't know, sexual preferences or whatever else, is antithetical to good order and discipline, to unit cohesion, to military performance, to readiness and deterrence, most especially, Wade. Having this conversation at a moment when we may be at the cusp of a shooting war with China.
Right.
All of that really matters at the moment, does it not?
You're absolutely right. Mission accomplishment right now is paramount. We need to really be focusing on the threats coming to us, not these woke indoctrination camps and studies. And look, their argument is going to be, why do you oppose inclusion and diversity? And in a bubble, those topics, you know, might be appropriate or might not. If they're almost always in the context of woke intersectionality, in which case they're never appropriate. But let's just say that you mean it innocently. What is the takeaway? If you're talking about just diversity and inclusion, take out equity, because equity always means racism or sexism, always. But if you're just talking about diversity and inclusion, what's the logical takeaway? Okay, so you don't think we have a diverse enough force. What's your solution? Because the only solution really that you could point to is racial quotas and sexual quotas, which is systemic racism and sexism. Almost never are those conversations actually functionally valid. It's just a virtue signaling effort to either they're true believers in the neo-Marxist agenda, or they're trying to kiss the ring and kiss butt in order to get their next promotion, which also signals to me that they don't have the integrity to be promoted because they need to stand up for the Constitution and what's right as a leader.
Amen. Wade Miller, thank you both for your service in uniform, as well as your service in the civil side of our government, and not least the civil role that you're playing in educating the rest of us about what's at stake with the nomination of C.Q. Brown, and more generally, the need for a debate about the cultural Marxism in the U.S. military. Godspeed, my friend. Come back to
Thanks
us
for having me
updates
on.
If you would.
Will do.
Join us next time, folks. And until then, go forth and multiply.
Night after night, in cities across the country, black garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, and about this time each week, we have the privilege of being in the company of Bill Walton, one of our regulars here at Securing America, I'm very proud to say, a recovering master of the universe on Wall Street, the president CEO of Allied Capital, a $6 billion operation up there. He knows his way around the street. He also knows his way around, well, politics and Washington, D.C., as a former president of the Council for National Policy, of which I'm proud to be a member, conservative leadership organization. Bill Walton is the host, most immediately and importantly at the moment, of The Bill Walton Show, which I strongly commend to all of you. It's a terrific resource. We're privileged to have him as a resource here as well. Bill, welcome back. Good to have you, sir.
Yeah, Frank, great talking with you.
Thank you. I wanted to catch up in the aftermath of Gina Raimondo's splendid adventure in Beijing. She is, of course, the Commerce Secretary. Bill, I just wondered, what was she doing in Beijing? What are the things, I guess, as importantly, she did before she went? And then what went down while she was there?
Well, we've talked about the kabuki theater that is the Biden administration when it comes to their dealings with China. Overarching goal for the Biden administration is we want climate change concessions, and China wants Taiwan. And we're two ships passing in the night, and the Commerce Department, which she runs, has always historically been more interested in promoting U.S. trade with China and vice versa. And she's still in that mode, and she's getting a lot of pressure from the tech companies and the big multinationals to just be nice to China. They very much would like all the unpleasantness to go away. They're ignoring things like, spy balloons flying over the United States and Gina
preparations
Raimondo,
for war, among other things. Yeah.
Well, yeah, there's that. And then, of course, Gina Raimondo had her own email hacked while she was in Beijing. And she said she admonished them and that was not very not very nice and didn't build trust. Well, anyway, so she's over there and she spent three long days there. She came away with really nothing. They agreed to create two or three fairly low-level working groups. And then she's now talking about how tough she is on China because we're not supposedly going to be selling them advanced semiconductors. Well, then she says, well, but we don't want to let this ban on their military-oriented semiconductors interfere with a regular semiconductor trade with China. The regular semiconductor trade, and she doesn't define that very well. And but you know the larger.
But Bill, wouldn't you be trading with an entity in the Chinese Communist Party that has the doctrine of civil military fusion?
Well, that's
which would mean everything that was going to the so-called non-military sector would be going to the military sector, would it not?
You know, you and I have talked about Bob Lighthizer, you know, the trade representative for Donald Trump. You know, he'll say point blank, there is no such thing as a private company in China. I mean, maybe the corner fish market, but essentially all the large companies and middle market companies are either directly controlled by the party or have party people involved with it. And so Gina has this fiction.
But even the corner market is going to do what they're told by the Chinese Communist Party. If they say, you know, you need to be keeping an eye on one of the customers, they're going to be keeping an eye on one of the customers, no?
Well, we haven't read any reports of fishmongers disappearing in China, but I'm sure they have because they've got to toe the line as much as anyone else. I'm laughing, but it's true. I mean, the oppression is complete. But she doesn't understand the total warfare, or at least she chooses not to. It's a question whether that's willful ignorance or something else going on.
But she's the Secretary of Commerce of the United States. How could it be that she is willfully ignorant, perhaps, or at least turning a blind eye to these things? I mean, she, in fairness, she did profess that she was concerned about national security. She just thought it could be somehow compartmentalized. But this would seem to be malfeasance of the first order if you are in a position like hers, knowing what we all now know about the Chinese Communist Party, civil military fusion, you know, the theft of intellectual property and all the rest.
Well, on the other hand, Frank, and pushing through that a bit more, I mean, her briefing book ought to explain to her that the Chinese economy is plummeting. The real estate market is imploding. Unemployment among kids, you know, I think it's 15 to 25 is hovering around 20-25%. Consumer spending is down, manufacturing output is down. I mean, all the metrics, and of course, China lies about these metrics. So what we're seeing are the burnished versions of it. She has an enormous opportunity to use economic leverage to bring about real concessions, and they're not doing any of that. It's really malpractice or malfeasance.
I couldn't agree more. Bill, malodorous. Bill, two things. One is that even if her briefing book didn't include all of that, yeah, she spoke with American business leaders in China. And they reportedly, she explained this publicly at the time while she was in Beijing, were telling her China is, a term you've used often here, uninvestable. So, I mean, it's more than just, as I say, willful blindness. It, I think, really is, you know, malfeasant. But the other thing is, Bill, on her way over there, she and the administration conjured up a bunch of concessions, I think it's fair to say, inducements, gifts to the Chinese Communist Party. One of them was she took 27 companies listed on her own department's so-called entities list, sanctioned Chinese companies, off the list as a kind of goodwill gesture. What was up with that?
Well, this is rookie negotiation 101. She thought by doing that, by making nice with the Chinese, by showing she's ready to make concessions, they'd be ready to make concessions. Well, that's not the way they think. And if they see that, all they see is weakness, and they're going to push for more. And so her gesture ended up hurting us, not helping us.
The gesture there was bad enough. And then there's the issue of what we've been told is, you know, an executive order
by the president that specifically was going to try to restrict some of those technologies. You mentioned semiconductors, but also quantum computing and not least artificial intelligence. And American investors were going to be told they're not supposed to put money into those companies. Uninvestable considerations aside, there were national security ones. And yet all of that seems to have been kicked down the road for a year, no less, and put in the hands of the Treasury Department, which is all about, you know, encouraging such foreign investment. No?
Well, Frank, I don't know if this is off topic or not, but put yourself in the position of our dear leader, Joe Biden. Joe Biden knows that the Chinese have every single email that he has been engaged in, every single bank account, every single wire transfer, every single business partner that his son and Hunter and he have had, everything going on. They have a complete briefing book ready to go if they want to use it that would show Joe Biden's essentially been a traitor to the country. And so he's there trying to act tough with China. China's very well aware that the U.S. politicians need to say tough things about China. And what China does is they take a look at what you actually do. And your point about the executive order does almost nothing. You know, we've been having negotiations within the Treasury Department with CFIUS, which is the group that monitors
Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. Yeah.
And, you know, the topics come up in the last year. Well, hey, we care about them investing here. We do, of course. We want to know what they're doing. But we have no idea what the outbound investment from the United States has gone into. I mean, we've got some very, you know, sketchy statistics. But, you know, my numbers suggest there's been about a trillion or 1.5 trillion to 3 trillion. Your numbers, I think you mentioned last time, were 5 or 6 trillion. We don't know where it went. And
Bill, here's the thing, that when you talk about that, that doesn't even take into account, I think, what a guy like Neil Shen at Sequoia Capital has been doing to marshal America's investment resources for the purpose explicitly of transferring technology to the Chinese Communist Party, something that a venture capital firm like his specializes in.
I hate to remind us of how blindly complacent we were. I remember Sequoia held their big investment conference just 3 years ago, or maybe it was 4 years ago, in Beijing, and proudly brought in members of the Chinese Communist Party to show what strong relationships they had inside China. And that is supposed to impress investors because they want people who know how to do business there. Well, now we're looking at that in a much colder light, but they were wearing it. They were wearing on their sleeve for a long time.
Well, Neil Shen, actually, I think has been an advisor to the Politburo, no less.
He's a deep insider, which makes him one of the richest venture capitalists in China.
It sure does, in the world, I think. Yeah. Bill, we have to leave it at that. I'm hoping that we'll hear from the Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party under Mike Gallagher that they're going to get into this issue of Sequoia Capital, but I'm not holding my breath. Bill, thank you for your time today, my friend. Come back to us again soon. It's always good to talk with you, and we look forward to doing so next week. We'll be right back with more right after this.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Xi Van Fleet is a foreign-born American patriot. In 2021, she prominently opposed the indoctrination and weaponization of our children in Northern Virginia public schools, reminiscent of the Cultural Revolution she lived through in Mao's China. Ms. Van Fleet is now warning that cultural revolutionaries here are using Maoist tactics to take down the party in power's political opponents. She knows from hard first-hand experience that what is being done today to former President Trump and his Make America Great Again movement will not be confined to those immediate targets. Xi Van Fleet attests that even those currently cheering on the prosecutions of Donald Trump and his allies will inevitably find themselves in the cultural Marxist crosshairs, possibly literally. We must indict and prosecute the Chinese Communist Party and its friends before they do the same to all of us. This is Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and I'm always pleased to be able to say we're joined by our duty genius here at Securing America. His name is George Raceley. He always laughs when I say that, but it's true. According to Mensa, of which he is a member, he is one. And I think he is one just on the basis of his past experience and everything that I know about him. And that's especially true of the Mundo Politico, as they call it, the political space, because he has served in various capacities on some 300 political campaigns from president on down over the course of many years. He has also worked on Capitol Hill. He's worked in the White House. He's worked for the Vice President of the United States. He's been, in short, a man who has real expertise on many of the subjects that we're interested in here at Securing America. These days, he comments on most of them with great effect at Conservative HQ, of which he's the editor-in-chief. That would be Richard Viguerie's splendid newsletter. George, it's great to have you back, sir. Welcome once again.
Thank you, Frank. Always good to be here.
I wanted to start, I guess, by a subject that I know you've addressed on several different occasions at Conservative HQ, and very helpfully so. We talked about it earlier in the program with Wade Miller, and that is the prospect that the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff will be a man who is an avowed champion of critical race theory, diversity, equity, inclusion, and I think the rest of what can only be described as a cultural Marxist takedown of the United States military. That would be General C.Q. Brown. Give us your quick thoughts as the Senate reconvenes and may take up this nomination at any time.
Well, you know, as we've discussed before, Frank, C.Q. Brown is kind of the canary in the mine, if you will, of how bad this has gotten, that a general who has arguably presided over the degradation of one of our more important service branches, the Air Force, which went from...
Especially in the Pacific these days.
Yeah, went from marginal to weak, to very weak under his command, is in line to essentially lead our entire military. And I attribute this degradation to this whole DEI mentality. And the problem is that it's infecting every branch, and it's not just the top command level where these guys are basically politicians. You know, it's getting down to the point where you've got the guys that are out there, boots on the ground, your majors, your captains, your light colonels, recognize that if they don't toe the line, if they don't at least mouth this stuff, they're not going to be advanced and their careers are over. And so
they may, in fact, be purged from the military.
Yeah, well, we saw that in the great Muslim purge under Obama. Yeah. And so.
Well, and I think it's been happening under this administration as well, whether it was for the jabs, which mm-hmm. certainly seemed to be in part about weeding out people who were resistors. Yeah. But it's also, I think, from January 6th forward, they were very clear that they were concerned about extremists in the ranks and they were going to weed them out, that stand downs and so on. And the thing is, George, as you say, if you permeate the ranks with this mm-hmm. kind of agenda, it's not just a temporary problem for recruitment or retention or readiness mm-hmm. or deterrence, for that matter. It becomes a permanent condition, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. And the thing of it is that you're essentially wiping out the bench. And so there won't be any officers advancing on the basis of merit or of their leadership skills. They're advancing on the basis of mouthing the right political slogans. And, they're purging. It's not just, the occasional wacko sort of outlier political belief on the right or left. They're purging guys that would be like my late father, who was, pretty much a country club Republican and also in the Army for a long career.
Warriors.
The guys that, like him, fought in World War II and Korea and then stayed in the reserves. I mean, a person like that who was in Desert Storm and Iraq and Afghanistan and is, a Barry Goldwater type voter is out.
And the thing that I guess I find particularly troubling is that when you talk about the end of a meritocracy, mm-hmm. The whole idea of the military being a place that is, by definition, inclusive, and if you perform, especially in combat, you will progress up the ranks.
Yeah.
If that goes over the side in favor of, you meet somebody's idea of a quota or some mm-hmm. personnel distribution, is it any wonder, George, that we're having trouble recruiting people to serve in this military? At this point, I think at a catastrophic shortfall kind of level.
Well, this is an attack on one of the fundamental elements of Western civilization, quite frankly. We can go back to the Greeks who saw merit, accomplishment, excellence as being what promoted one up through civil and military society. And if we abandon excellence and merit in favor of quotas and political slogans, it's not just the military, but it's our whole country that's, in definite danger.
In jeopardy. You're absolutely right. George, we have to take a very short break. When we come back, I want to ask you quickly to update us on the travails of Donald Trump and what it says about the rule of law in our country, and also a very important mm-hmm. piece that you've written about the Biden administration's approach to Iran and the moral perils associated with it. We'll be right back with more right after this.
We're back, and we're visiting with George Raceley, the editor-in-chief of Conservative HQ. I strongly commend it to you all as a really vital source of news and information and analysis, as well as George's wonderful editorializing. George, I want to ask you about Donald Trump. As we speak, he is now on notice from a federal judge that he has to basically spend the campaign season in court, not on the hustings. And that, among other things, they're going to give him a very short period of time to prepare, among other things, for his part in a racketeering charge involving some 18 other individuals, as I understand it. First of all, what's going on here, George? And second of all, what does it tell us about the rule of law in our country at the moment?
Well, what's going on is a classic example of the left doing what they accuse Republicans of doing, which is election interference. You know, this whole thing is timed to destroy Trump's opportunity to campaign, not just in a general election, but in the primary. It, you know, many of these things fall right before Super Tuesday, which is one of the largest blocks of votes for the Republican nomination. But I mean, what's going on here really is the criminalization of free speech and the First Amendment. I mean, all Americans, even Donald Trump, if you don't like him, have the right to petition their government for redress, have the right to speak freely. Their thoughts about whether elections were conducted legally and properly and who won them. And so
something that Democrats have frequently engaged in.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing. I mean, the exact same things that Trump has now been indicted for have been done by Democrats in the past with no consequences.
And properly so. There shouldn't have been
and properly so.
Even if they were manufacturing the reasons for those complaints. So, George, this is clearly bad business, political warfare, election interference, as you call it. What does it say to the average American about the fact that this is all happening on the one hand, and a guy like Hunter Biden and his father, Joe, are apparently not going to be considered by the Justice Department as guilty of or even charged with anything when so much seems to be really amiss there?
Well, I think what it's causing, you know, the average American on the street to lose faith in their country and its institutions and to distance themselves from participation. I mean, if it doesn't matter what I do, how I vote, because the Democrats aren't going to count my vote correctly or are going to throw my candidate in jail, then why bother?
And unfortunately, that undermines not only the electoral process and the possibilities
but
of
all
change.
All of civil society.
All of civil society. Exactly right. It really it violates the contract between, you know, the governed and the government. So much more on that subject, but let me pivot to one other with you, George Raceley. The Biden administration, which I consider to be really the Obama-Biden 3.0 administration, has been faithfully taking to the, well, illogical extreme conclusion what the previous two sought to do with respect to the Islamic Republic of Iran. Give us a quick update what it is doing in that regard and the implications for our national security and safety.
Well, they just essentially did a multi-billion dollar ransom of a handful of Americans, leaving several others that we know about behind, including Mr. Levinson, who's been there for 16 years, unaccounted for. But they've also, and this is really astonishing, I mean, they had one of what I consider Iran's worst international operators, Hussein Mousavian, speak to STRATCOM, which was this
Strategic command of the United States military.
And I mean, it's like inviting a senior KGB agent to come teach at Princeton and come and address our senior military leadership and have access to them, you know, to pal around with them for a weekend.
Isn't an intelligence guy. This is a terrorist, as I understand it, and an unrepentant terrorist at that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just astonishing that they would invite this guy to speak at STRATCOM, to host him there, to squire him around amongst our top military leadership, and unapologetically say, oh, well, you know, we want to get all sides of this thing. Well, we already know his side, death to America.
It is indeed. And George, I guess that's the thing. It goes back to what we talked about at the beginning. Is this evidence of just lousy political leadership and policies it's promulgating? Or is this evidence of rot inside the military as well? Are these guys just following orders, as they say, or are they in on, you know, whatever the agenda may be of the administration, no matter how indifferent at best or at worst, really harmful to the national security it is?
Well, I find it hard to believe that our senior military leadership is so dumb that they don't believe when Iran's senior leadership says they want to destroy America, that they think the Iranians are just kidding.
And George, I have to say, this isn't just a one-off. They've been saying it since they came to power 40 plus years ago now.
Exactly. 1976 or so. So, you know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. And I wish I could understand the thinking behind it, but I cannot. I mean, it's the equivalent of, you know, having Joseph Goebbels come and talk to our military leadership pre-World War II. I mean, that's how bad it is.
Well, I think it may be worse than that. May be, Osama bin Laden, being treated with reverence. That's the other piece of this that's so horrifying. Yeah. George, we have to leave it at that. Thank you for this update on so many very important topics. Keep up the great work at Conservative HQ and come back soon. I hope the rest of you will do the same next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.